Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about evolution and intelligent design. I'm your host, Todd Butterfield. Today, I'm pleased to bring you an excerpt from a fun new book making the case for intelligent design. Heretic, One Scientist's Journey from Darwin to Design. The Discovery Institute Press book is available at Amazon, paperback, and Kindle. It has two authors. One is Center for Science and Culture Senior Fellow Jonathan Witt. He specializes in making the complex easy to grasp. The other name may be new to you, Finnish bioengineer Matti Laisela. He's a former dean at Helsinki University of Technology, with 140 peer-reviewed science articles to his name. He also served as a biotech research director for an international biotech company, co-founded the International Society of Rare Sugars, and was the founding editor of the journal Biocomplexity. So this guy really knows his science, and his new book, Heretic, is about how the scientific evidence led him from Darwinism to intelligent design. So now, without further ado, the opening pages of Heretic, One Scientist's Journey from Darwin to Design. As a scientist in my native Finland and later in Switzerland, I have been privileged to take part in some significant scientific breakthroughs, to lead some groundbreaking research projects in biochemistry and biotechnology, and to work alongside some world-famous scientists from Europe, Japan, and the United States. While we did not always see eye to eye, we shared a love for scientific testing and discovery. But there was another side of me, as there was and is another side to contemporary scientific culture. As a young student, I used to laugh at those who, as I thought, placed God in the gaps of our scientific knowledge. This God of the gaps criticism is often leveled against Christians and other religious believers, against all those who insist there is clear evidence of design in nature. To my way of thinking, such people lacked the patience and level-headedness that I possessed. It was so clear to me. Instead of plugging away to discover the natural mechanism for this or that mystery about the natural world, these pro-design people threw up their hands and used the God-did-it explanation as a cover for ignorance. This criticism of intelligent design proponents struck me as reasonable, so I didn't listen to their arguments. But eventually I came to realize that this criticism cuts both ways, since a functional atheist also can reach for pat explanations in the face of mystery. It's just that, for him, the pat explanation will never be God. That is, you do not need God in your explanatory toolkit in order to short-circuit careful scientific investigation and reasoning. I realized that I myself had been all too willing to stuff vague materialistic explanations into the gaps of our scientific knowledge. I also recognized something else that the God of the gaps criticism obscures. The more we learn about the natural world, the more fresh mysteries open up before us. David Berlinski, who has taught at Stanford, Rutgers, the City University of New York, and the University of Paris, put it this way in The Devil's Delusion. Western science has proceeded by filling gaps, but in filling them, it has created gaps all over again. The process is inexhaustible. Einstein created the special theory of relativity to accommodate certain anomalies in the interpretation of Clerk Maxwell's theory of the electromagnetic field. Special relativity led directly to general relativity, but general relativity is inconsistent with quantum mechanics, the largest visions of the physical world alien to one another. Understanding has improved, but within the physical sciences, anomalies have grown great, and what is more, anomalies have grown great because understanding has improved. The God of the gaps criticism ignores this well-established pattern. Materialists think that because we continue to make discoveries about the natural world, the pool of known mysteries must be shrinking towards zero. Instead, whole landscapes of new mystery present themselves to science precisely when some major new discovery is achieved, like the explorer reaching the crest of a mountain and finding a new realm before him. Also, their argument for entertaining only material explanations in the sciences just assumes that everything we find in nature has a purely material cause. But what if that assumption is wrong? What if there are features of the natural world, the laws and constants of nature, for instance, that really are the work of a creative intelligence? Scientists are supposed to investigate mysteries with an open mind, not assume an explanation from the outset. I came to see that the best approach is to evaluate which explanation among the live options is more logical and fits the facts better. I also realized that it isn't very scientific to simply trust the majority of scientific specialists on a subject. The majority view may be correct, but the history of science shows that often it is incorrect. Scientific progress requires some healthy skepticism, and that means resisting the cult of "science says," even when authoritative sources reassure us with talk of scientific studies. For one instance, in 1964, the New York Times reported that hundreds of scientific studies showed that there was no conclusive evidence that smoking causes lung cancer. Here's a quote from that article. "Studies made in the last 10 years have found no laboratory evidence linking lung cancer or fatal heart disease with cigarette smoking," the Council for Tobacco Research asserted yesterday in its 1963-64 report. A 71-page booklet written by Dr. Clarence Cook Little said the council had evaluated 350 reports by scientists working with council grants and had found little to support the charge that cigarette smoke produces cancer. Fortunately, in this case, there were studies and official scientific voices pushing the other direction, and soon the Council for Tobacco Research's 1963-64 report had lost credibility. Sometimes, however, the most prominent voices, the ones deemed to speak most authoritatively for science, have lined up squarely behind a position later found to be false. And such instances are not restricted to long centuries ago when science was in its infancy. The illness known as pellagra reached epidemic proportions in the United States in the early 20th century. The scientific consensus attributed it to an infectious agent or moldy corn. It turned out to be a vitamin deficiency. Also, through much of the 20th century, the conventional scientific wisdom was that the continents were fixed. When German geologist Alfred Wegener published The Origin of Continents and Oceans, arguing for the idea of continental drift, he was excoriated as a sloppy crank, a man so enamored of his pet theory that he was blind to the facts. Fully half a century after his book appeared, he was still viewed with suspicion. Today, his idea of drifting continents is the standard one in geology. A third instance, even more recent, backed by the authority of the U.S. government, the scientific establishment deemed eggs bad for your heart and pushed this narrative for years. These scientific authorities insisted eggs were bad for you and ended up with egg on their faces. These examples underscore what should be obvious. How could science progress if we could never question or abandon the majority scientific opinion? We would all still be geocentrists who thought the continents were fixed and that eggs were terrible for you. Swimming against the current isn't easy, of course. My own voyage away from the naturalistic evolutionary faith was long and painstaking. In this book, I describe that journey. I also detail the evasions, hatred, suspicions, contempt, fears, power games, and persecution that face scientists who oppose the evolutionary paradigm and the naturalistic worldview behind it. The journey, understand, hasn't been all blood and bruises. I started out as a scientist in my native Finland, then spent several years as a scientist in Zurich, with many wonderful experiences in both places. I then returned to Finland in 1988 and worked as a research director in the biotech industry, and then for 15 years as a professor of bioprocess engineering. During this period, I lectured on biotechnology, but also gave talks in several Finnish universities about chemical and biological evolution with titles such as Evolution, a Modern Creation Myth. What differentiates men from stone? From stone to man. And The Riddle of the Origin of Life. The lecture halls were often full to bursting. During these years, I have spoken throughout Europe, North America, and Japan, in polytechnic schools, scientific meetings, and rotary clubs, at private research companies and public universities, often to highly engaged and animated audiences. But the most interesting and rewarding visits I have had were in high schools, and this despite the fact that the headmasters are not always excited about my visits, since I challenge some of the material in their assigned textbooks. While a research director at Coulter, I visited a nearby high school many times from 1991 to 1996. The students were more than interested listeners and discussion partners. One teacher expressed astonishment that when the lunch bell rang during my talk, the students did not bolt for the cafeteria, but instead continued listening and asking questions. One of the students later became one of my students and completed a doctoral thesis under my supervision. This should not have surprised the teachers. Teaching biology, or any field of science, as settled dogma, and a dogma moreover that points to a universe drained of meaning and purpose, that is an approach hardly calculated to fascinate and draw young people into the sciences. But imagine teaching biology and other disciplines, like physics and astronomy, so that students are encouraged to think critically about scientific theories. Imagine the students being exposed not only to the evidence for a reigning theory, but also to evidence contradicting the theory. And imagine the students not being force-fed one worldview masquerading as science, but being freed to consider which worldview the evidence best supports. That's an approach all but guaranteed to energize and excite. That was an excerpt from the new ID book, Heretic, One Scientist's Journey from Darwin to Design. Find it at Amazon by searching for Heretic, One Scientist's Journey. And check out the editorial reviews on the book's Amazon page by scrolling down from the top. You'll see a name there that's familiar to many ID the Future listeners, biologist Jonathan Wells. But there are also endorsements from some distinguished European scientists. Grab a copy at Amazon and tell your friends about it on social media. It's Heretic, One Scientist's Journey from Darwin to Design. For ID the Future, this is Todd Butterfield. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.